Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of July, 2015, a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises, traveling in southern Indiana today. We'll catch up with him. He should still be in Mount Vernon in southern Indiana, not Illinois, but Indiana. We'll discuss the marketplace with him and take up the cash grain market with Matt Bennett. He's in Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, and Bennett Consulting. And as we close out the half hour, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Don't forget, you can find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago at the CME Group this afternoon. September corn up a half cent at 403 and a quarter. December at 413 and three quarters. The new crop up a quarter. March unchanged. May unchanged. July at 433 and a quarter, down a half. And next year's December down a quarter at 416 and three quarters. August soybeans were 10 and three quarters lower today. $10.10 the final trade there. September at 986 and a quarter, down 13 and a quarter. In November, the new crop down 15 cents at $9.80 and a half. January futures 9.86 and a quarter, down 14 and three quarters. July down 11 and a quarter. And next year's November beans at 9.34, down 7 and three quarters. Wheat futures at 5.21 and a half, up 4 and three quarters for the day. In the soft red, the hard red at 5.17, up 4 and three quarters. Bean meal at 3.59, down 4.50. Bean oil 16 cents lower at 31.19. Live cattle futures in the August contract 143.35, down $1.15. August feeders at 209.77 a half, $2.60 lower. The September contract there at $3.10 at 207.50. Lean hogs August contract 17 and a half lower at 78.35, and the October at 64.92 and a half. Down 47 and a half cents. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Quick look at the outside markets. Crude oil for the day at $48.62 a barrel is down 57 cents. Ethanol, 9 cents lower, 9 tenths of a cent lower, that is. It's trading at $1.52 and 3 tenths of a cent. Find us online at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
A couple of the other marketplaces to look at. The price of gasoline on the RBOB today is a penny and 3 tenths of a cent lower at this hour at $1.85 and 4 tenths. Diesel fuel trading at $1.65 and 4 tenths is down a penny and 7 tenths. And natural gas for the day at $2.81 and 3 tenths is 8 and 4 tenths of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 17,656. It's 129 points lower. The U.S. dollar down 0.497 at 97.225. And gold futures are currently trading at $1,089.75, and they're now down $1.75 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A high of 83, mostly sunny skies tonight, clear and 63. Tomorrow, sunny and 86, and on Friday evening, mostly clear and 67. By the time we get to Saturday, a 30% chance of some showers, thunderstorms, mostly sunny, and a high of 88 degrees on a south-southwest wind by then. At 6 to 10 miles an hour on Saturday evening, a 40% chance of rainfall, mostly cloudy, and 70 degrees. That 40% chance in the Urbana-Champaign area continues through Sunday daytime hours, and with a mostly cloudy sky and 85 degrees. And then Sunday night, more showers, cloudy and 68. Those showers continue Monday, Monday night, Tuesday, Tuesday night, and Wednesday with highs and lows of 86 and 70, 86 and 70, and 86 degrees. More on the weather at the bottom of the hour.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. It is the 23rd day of July. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the line is Dan Zwicker. He's in Mount Vernon, Indiana, and hails from CGB Enterprises out of New Orleans most days, and joins us on Thursdays each and every week. Thanks for traveling and talking with us. We do appreciate it, Dan. Did you have a couple of good meetings today?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we had a nice crowd at Alany yesterday, and then we've had two smaller meetings here in the office. We're kind of limited to space, but we got a brand new office building with a nice auditorium in it, so we had to kind of have two smaller meetings rather than one larger one, but everything went real well.
Okay, so I want to go through a couple of things with you. It was clear that there was a time within the last 2 weeks that you were really pretty bullish about the marketplace. Thursday last week changed your mind midday. I want to know technically what happened and where you stand today.
Well, it was the way the market closed on Thursday that turned me bullish, from friendly probably on Thursday morning's tape to 115, the way we closed. And it basically suggested that we were going to have some kind of correction. I didn't necessarily know what type of correction we were going to have, but it did indicate to me that the emotion from the June stocks report and all of the emotion from the excessive rainfall that we've experienced in the eastern Corn Belt kind of climaxed. And I think that has kind of been what the tailspin in the corn market has been since then, because Friday we were down pretty hard, and then we've kind of followed that here into Monday, Tuesday. Now, today, it was kind of a victory here. Been watching this 50% retracement level of that June-July advance, and that came into play here right at today's low almost at 408 and a half. The 50% retracement, I think exactly, is like a quarter, 308 and a quarter, or 3/8. And then we were able to at least come back and close unchanged to fractionally higher. 50% retracement levels have a strong tendency to be good support points on a correction, on a downward correctional, or a resistance point on an upward recovery rally, depending upon which direction the overall trend is. So today, I think, is a key day. We do need to see some follow-through. If we see some follow-through and we could kind of close out tomorrow with some good, decent gains, a lot of your technical indicators now are ripe to start rolling up. The downward momentum, or most of the downward momentum, is complete. And then we're going to have the 50-day moving average in position to cross above the 100-day moving average in December corn. And if that happens, I would expect to see a new hedge fund buying come into the market, or index fund buying. Those are the that's a long-term moving average that they watch for long-term positioning. Now, they're much different than your traditional trading funds. Your trading funds look at different technical indicators because they're more in and out of the market, but your index funds look at some of these longer-term moving averages. Now, the long-term moving average on lead corn futures, the 50-day has already crossed above that, and the lead corn futures did dip below the 38% retracement level of that June-July advance, and now we closed right at it today. So I think this is the do-or-die time, I guess, for corn. If corn is going to stage a recovery rally, and take a good run at those June highs or July highs, we need to see some strong technical buying, follow-through buying here on Friday's market, and then that should carry through on into Monday. Now, a lot of times the market will go opposite the dominant trend of the month on the last week of the month. The next week is the last week of July, and the month of July has been down because we peaked real early in the month on that June stocks report. So the odds are at least favor some kind of end of the month, a short covering rally, and then that would definitely shore up the technical picture. And then once we get past that, then we're going to start hearing all kinds of private estimates on August crop report, what to expect, good, bad, indifferent. There's going to be a wide variety of opinions on it. So then the market is going to be anxious going into that August crop report, which I think is going to be like the 12th or 11th or 12th or something like 12th. That. So that's where we're at on corn. Soybeans, probably not so good today, but I don't see soybeans having made any major technical damage today with today's decline. It's just the 38% retracement level failed to hold on the just held on the lead futures, but it did not on the November beans. The November beans, we went down below the 38% retracement level. The 50% kind of comes in here at 970. If we could stop the bleeding and the market could turn around and close higher tomorrow, then I think we'd be okay on the soybean market. Now, on lead futures, just as in corn, the 50-day has already crossed above the 100-day moving average on beans. So it'll be interesting to see if we can hold the market here and bring in some new index fund buying or long-term moving average buying. If we can, then we've got a recovery rally kind of in the makings, maybe going into the August crop report, and then we'll see what USDA has to say and whether or not the trade believes it or not. But you can kind of tell, at least the way the market has performed, that at least the anxiety over what we might, you know, how small a crop could be, that has kind of exhausted us out. And, you know, when you look at crop rating levels, we've got two-thirds of the crop in good to excellent shape and one-third of the crop in fair to poor. And the big argument is, where does that put the national average yield? Well, that's still to be determined. I still think we've got 3 to 4 weeks of weather yet. And then we still have acreage changes ahead of us, probably more so in soybeans and corn. But we probably got a few months of acreage changes and whatnot. So it's an interesting market.
It is an interesting market. It's really interesting to talk to you, too, Dan. I recall vividly telling me that the technicals will tell you where the market's may head, but the fundamentals have to push it there, and so we're at that point where we're watching to see what the fundamentals will do. And last week, from morning to afternoon, I think if for the listeners and myself, I was astounded because I knew on Thursday, I knew Thursday morning you wanted another 10 minutes to talk with me and to lay out the bullish scenario. And by Thursday afternoon, things had changed dramatically. But I know that can happen on maps and charts. And apparently that's the way it worked. Thank you so much.
And I still feel that way. Maybe we just got – I got delayed a week. We'll have to see how the market performs here to finish out the week. But I know there's people that are calling this seasonal highs. You know, there's no doubt about it. The lead soybean futures has a double top in it.
You bet.
But that doesn't mean that that's going to hold. And all markets have to take a breather. I mean, we're 8 weeks out from when the beans turned up. And for you know from working with me, soybeans have an 8-week cycle from low to low. So I think this is an eight-week cycle low in here this week in beans. So that should key beans up for a 3 to 4 week rally as we go on into August. And we'll kind of see. The August crop report is going to be real pivotal. There's no doubt about that. And, of course, weather. We've had a lot of moisture, and I think if we would ever get into a two-week dry spell, I think you'd be surprised how quickly some of these high, lofty yield expectations could come off the table pretty quickly.
Hey, thanks so much, Dan. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises. He's traveling today, of course, came to us from Mount Vernon, Indiana, and CGB's new office spaces there. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. House today started debate on a voluntary national labeling system for genetically modified foods in a bid to head off individual states' efforts to require labeling. The battle lines are clearly drawn over GMO labeling. Most Republicans see individual state requirements as a threat to agriculture and interfering in interstate commerce. Many Democrats, on the other hand, say consumers have a right to know if GMOs are in their food. Alabama Republican Bradley Burns says hundreds of groups now back a voluntary USDA labeling system.
This common sense legislation is supported by almost 500 associations and farmers from Hawaii to Maine. The current regulatory system is a patchwork of state and local regulations which create unnecessary costs among consumers and food manufacturers without really helping to increase consumer awareness.
Byrne argues a national voluntary label will increase awareness without burden to producers and food makers. But many Democrats, led on the issue by Massachusetts Jim McGovern, argue for a mandatory label as the only sure way to get the information to consumers.
This isn't a debate about the science behind GMOs. That's a separate debate. But whether you love GMOs or hate them, you ought to know if the food that you're feeding your family is made from them. Mr. Speaker, the Food and Drug Administration requires labeling of thousands of ingredients, additives, and processes, many of which have nothing to do with safety or nutrition.
But the controversy surrounding GMOs is over safety, and farmers and food processors see required labels as a kind of skull and crossbones on food, even as studies have shown GMO-containing food is safe. The House is expected to pass its voluntary labeling bill this week before the issue moves to the Senate, working on its own version. Let's move from Washington, D.C. now to global policy. Trade ministers from 11 countries involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, will meet in Hawaii next Tuesday. The meeting is scheduled in an attempt to finalize what would be the world's largest regional trade agreement. But an article published by the Pew Research Center suggests while the pact has general public support in most of the countries involved, there are also deep partisan divisions in some over the issue. Their research shows the strongest support for the agreement is found in Vietnam, where 89% of the public backs the potential agreement. The weakest support is in the United States and in Malaysia. The greatest outright opposition is Canada, Australia, and, of course, the United States. And about 1 in 10 Americans say they haven't even heard of the negotiations. And finally today, in a release by University of Illinois, the state has announced a plan to reduce nutrient pollution in the Gulf of Mexico. The release calls Illinois a key contributor to the dead zone. That's a section of water the size of Connecticut devoid of oxygen that forms every summer. The Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy outlines a set of voluntary and mandatory practices for both urban and agricultural sources for reducing the primary drivers of the algal blooms, phosphorus, and nitrogen. The collaborative effort began almost 2 years ago in response to the federal 2008 Gulf of Mexico Action Plan, which calls for all 12 states in the Mississippi River Basin to develop plans to reduce nutrient losses to the Gulf. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Matt Bennett on the phone line this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market and what's been happening in his area and there on the farm. Outside, of course, Windsor, Illinois. Matt, thanks for being with us. Tell me about conditions on your farm today.
Yeah, I think our farm's in pretty good shape relative to a decent chunk of Illinois, I think. You know, we don't have the crop we had last year by any stretch of the imagination, but we've got a pretty good-looking crop. We do have some holes here and there. Pollination, I think, was pretty good for the most part. Been out in some fields recently. Yeah, I think we'll have, you know, some 200 bushel corn out there, but I don't think that you're going to have any of the 250s and 260s. At least there'll be few and far between.
Yeah, have you gotten a chance to take a look at your beans, and have they come around with a little sunshine and heat?
Yeah, definitely. The beans have come around. It's exactly what the beans needed. I think that beans are always made in August. We know that. I know they had a lot of stress earlier on, but it seems to me like, in my short farming career, it seems to me like, beans recover somewhat, at least relative to corn. Once you really damage a corn plant, there's just no coming back. And with beans, it seems like if you can get them to go ahead and grow, they'll throw on a few blooms, and next thing you know, you've got 40 bushel beans.
When you look forward to the August 12 crop production report and WASDE figures USDA will release, they will be resurveying farmers in Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. Are your expectations that you'll see a number of bean acres disappear or not?
Yeah, I think that you're going to see some bean acres disappear. I know talking to some people that, talked to in Missouri, there were some beans planted last week, but there was also a lot of beans that were, not treated, obviously, that were hauled to the elevator and dumped. So I think there's going to be a little bit of both, some late plantings, and then some guys just gave up on them. So I think that your harvested acres probably won't come down near as much as what people think, but they're going to come down some because some of these late plantings will probably bolster that a little bit.
Do you have an idea in southern Indiana, southern Illinois with the rainfall? And I've heard this a couple of times, how much prevent plant for soybeans there might be there too? And this won't be resurveyed. Those will show up in FSA numbers eventually.
Right. I think there's more than what people think. I don't have any good handle on it. I've talked to a lot of different people in the seed business that have said, we had guys that just gave up on it. I talked to a guy we've got in southern Illinois that said one of his customers had 30 inches of rain in the month of June. So obviously when you have something like that, you just deck stacked against you. But, that's something that's going to probably come out there in October, and we'll probably get a little bit better handle on what those acres might be in states that aren't resurveyed.
Farmers tend to be optimistic. Anything that producers should be doing right now to protect themselves, or are we waiting it out?
Yeah, I think right now it's kind of a wait-and-see mode. I think there's going to be a lot of volatility trying to get to the point where we figure out what yields are. I've been encouraging my producers, though, if they're more profitable than what they were, 3 or 4 weeks ago, probably a good idea to maybe lock some stuff in. Hope it's your worst sale, if nothing else, for some of the guys that haven't done anything yet.
All right. Thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Yep. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. He joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report for Illinois Public Media. I'll record Commodity Week this afternoon, by the way. Elaine Cubb will be on along with Kurt Kimmel and Dwayne Nelson. Those two are coming to the studio. We should have a nice time with them. That happens about 3:30 this afternoon. We'll get up on the website by just about 5 o'clock.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Vanilla Ice Cream Day. It's also St. Focus the Gardener Day, patron of farmers and gardeners. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, St. Thomas Brisbane was born. Brisbane conducted a number of experiments in growing Virginia tobacco, Georgia cotton, Brazilian coffee, and New Zealand flax. All were colossal failures. Brisbane was far better known for his study of the southern sky. In 1875, Isaac Singer died, an English inventor. He was best known for his continuous stitch sewing machine. By 1861, Singer was chief of the world's largest sewing machine manufacturing company. By the way, Singer spent millions of dollars on advertising, and he made purchases possible by offering installment credit. In 1876, Joseph Rogers Brown died, an American manufacturer. He invented a precision gear cutter that produced a universal milling machine. In 1903, the first Ford Model A was sold. It featured a twin-cylinder internal combustion engine designed by then little-known Michigan machinist Henry Ford. And in 1904, by some accounts, the ice cream cone was invented at the St. Louis World's Fair. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather in Chicago is here to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Mike, it appears that it's going to get warmer. The question really is, for how long?
That is the big question, and it's a very important question. Corn pollination is now in full swing across the Midwest, and these cool temperatures that we've had over the last couple of days have been very well timed for that process. But it is going to end as we move forward. Temperatures tomorrow will be around 5 to 8 degrees warmer than today, and then another 5 to 8 degrees warmer after that. That'll put temperatures in the 90s across most of the Corn Belt by the time we get into Saturday or Sunday. Now, the one wild card in all this, as always, is the coverage of thunderstorms. We know that thunderstorms are going to pop up along the edge of heat, but we're not exactly sure how many storms there will be or exactly where they will locate. Most indications suggest that all of the rainfall activity through the weekend would mainly be to the north and west of Illinois, which would be a good thing for most people after all the rain that we've seen over the last several weeks and months. But if we don't see too much in the way of thunderstorms up there, that will leave us with a lot more sunshine than we're currently anticipating, and that would send temperatures a little bit upward more quickly. But the main point here is that we're going to be seeing high temperatures in the 90s for many of the next 6 to 7 days, with low temperatures generally in the 70s. And that's around 5 to 6 degrees below normal, and more than likely will end up as the warmest period of the growing season so far.
During the summer months, we always worry year in and year out, no matter really conditions on the ground across the Corn Belt, particularly about the Western Corn Belt. It can get dry very quickly. Are they suffering at all yet? It sounds as if they're coming at least through the beginning of the season in really good shape.
They certainly are, and that's a combination of adequate rainfall as well as normal temperatures. It hasn't been too hot, it hasn't been too cool, and it hasn't been too dry or wet as you move away from Illinois onto the north and west. So conditions now are pretty good. It has dried out a little bit over the last couple of weeks in parts of Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota. But if you look at the coverage of dryness over the most recent 14-day period and compare it to the last four growing seasons, coverage right now is much lower than any of the last four growing seasons, which just tells you that most areas are adequately wet, and as we know, some areas are too wet. But keep in mind, Todd, even though we have really good soil moisture at the moment in most areas, we don't really want this period of heat coming up to last for too long. Most indications are that it should come to a fairly dramatic end sometime around Wednesday or Thursday of next week. As long as that works out, we'll continue to be looking at a generally favorable growing season, except for all the rain that we saw from Missouri through Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio from June into July. That might turn into an issue later in the season once the USDA can get out there and start looking at some of these fields and putting together their yield reports. But at least for the moment, as long as it turns cooler next week and we continue to see a few areas of thunderstorms with not too much in the way of heavy rain, which is what we expect, not too much in the way of heavy rain, then it's real hard at this point in time to argue that a disaster is out there, just as long as the conditions in areas that were flooded aren't actually a disaster and not as widespread as they might have been had it continued to rain.
Thanks, Mike. Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather from Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.